Resistance to fascism. Movement lawyering for racial justice. Disaster capitalism, colonialism, and climate change. What it means to do movement legal support in indigenous communities, and much more. Again, registration is now open for the Law for the People National Lawyers Guild Convention from October 31st through the 4th at the Benson Hotel, 309 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Save the Village, an open house for community in action on Sunday, October 14th from 2 to 5 p.m. at Foster Village in Portland. Save the Village is an open house of Foster Village, which features tours, information of the skills and best practices of community living, live music, food, and celebration. There will also be the opportunity to learn more about the expansion of Foster Village through the purchase of the Orange House. Again, that's Save the Village, an open house for community in action on Sunday, October 14th from 2 to 5 p.m. at Foster Village, 4635 Southeast 64th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO hosts a monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater called KBOO at the Clinton. This month, on Thursday, October 11th at 7 p.m., we'll celebrate Dia de los Muertos. Muertos Film and Music Night will highlight some of the Dia de los Muertos traditions of Mexico, Central and South America. We'll screen authentic Day of the Dead short films and feature live performances by Virginia Lopez, Mariachi Portland, and more. Again, that's a film celebration of Dia de los Muertos, Thursday, October 11th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. This evening, we are here with Mr. Clayton Dewey with the Incarcerated Worker Organizing Committee. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Right on. Thanks for being on. Can you start off, just give us a sense of some of your background, how you got involved with this work, and where that took you up until now?
Sure. Yeah. So I think I got most directly involved in prison abolition work through my work with the Anarchist Black Cross in the kind of mid-2000s. And as part of doing so, the Anarchist Black Cross is a group that supports political prisoners and prisoners of war here in the United States and elsewhere around the world. And in doing that work, I became good friends with Marius Mason, who is a political prisoner here in the U.S. In a federal penitentiary, Carswell, in Texas. And just continued to stay involved in becoming in touch with other people incarcerated, and eventually led me to my involvement with the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, which is a kind of prisoner-led section of the union, the Industrial Workers of the World. And so I'm member of that as well, and the worker owner cooperative I'm part of, we're part of the union and affiliated, so involved in a few different capacities in all of that.
So you are involved with IWOC and some of the outreach regarding that, and talking about this most recent national strike happening inside the prisons in August 2018. And before that, there's been a whole long history, of course, of prison insurrections. Recent ones in the 21st century, you know, there's the Pelican Bay uprising in 2010, and then fast forwarding to the September 9th commemoration of Attica, which really officially marks one of the first national strikes. So this is another attempt at doing that. So can you give us some kind of context before we get into the real nuts and bolts of what went down in August?
Yeah, sure. I mean, as long as there have been prisons, there's been resistance against those prisons and against confinement and enslavement and shackling. And but I think Pelican Bay in particular was a moment where there's like a really strong inside-outside alliance. And there's just been increased kind of connections between people outside of prison and people inside of prison, so that when prisoners are standing up for themselves, there is more of a support network behind them on the outside. That support is pretty critical. Otherwise, you know, those kinds of things can flare up, but then not really be sustained if there isn't. It's more difficult to sustain them if there's not like solid outside support, and so I think we've seen that over the past few years, and as a result, I think it's kind of two things. One is that things like hunger strikes and work stoppages and boycotts and protests on the inside are just becoming more known. They were already happening before. It's just that people on the outside are more aware of them. But then I think there is a bit of an uptick in activity as well, like political activity. And there's been a shift in consciousness too. There's more like there's more of a widespread understanding that prisons aren't working and they aren't solving, you know, problems that they purport to solve. And people are much more critical of their role in society than in the past. And so I think, but we haven't seen real substantive change.
Right.
So while there's been a consciousness shift, there hasn't been really much action. At least here in Colorado, like we've seen a slight decrease in the prison population, but it's really low. And in some counties, it's actually increasing again. So as a result, you know, I think more and more folks, especially on the inside, are, you know, kind of losing their patience with it and taking, you know, taking direct action, standing up for themselves.
So there's a lot of push and pull factors going on, and definitely it's not that really we've seen so many prisons being closed or so many prisoners getting out. It's far and few in between some examples of that. So can you talk about what led up to this August event and where that's gone from now, or where it went from August, rather?
Sure, yeah. So I guess continuing on that topic, you know, while there's been this heightened awareness around the problems with prisons, again, there hasn't been real meaningful reform or improvement. In fact, in some ways, it's gotten worse. The sort of like austerity measures that we're all feeling on the outside, with programs being cut, social safety net being slashed, the same is happening, at least in some states, particularly in the South. And so what we're seeing is budgets being slashed across the board in terms of like state government, but not a decrease in people being incarcerated. And so you have these situations of overcrowding, high turnover of prison guards, just really dysfunctional administrations. And so it's, you know, taking a bad situation and just making it worse. And that's led to a few things. One of the deadliest and most horrific is at Lee Correctional Facility in South Carolina. As these facilities have become more and more just dysfunctional, one of the tactics that the prison officials employ is to pit prisoners against each other, mm-hmm. and to try and stoke tensions and animosity between rival groups or what have you. And so, you know, doing things like bunking people that they know aren't going to get along together, and not addressing grievances, and in fact just even provoking them, so that people in prison are, their attention is on one another rather than the system itself. And that led to, you know, those conditions kind of getting stoked by the officials led to a riot or brawl like in the facility. And rather than step in and intervene, you know, the prison guards turned their back and let this go on for literally hours. Mm-hmm. And as a result, several people lost their lives. Many more were injured, critically injured. And so, just that even happened is just terrible, mm-hmm. and horrific. And to add insult to injury, the way that it was responded to by the media, and the prison guards, well, they're the prison officials, it was like, this was a call for, you know, more money for the prison system, more money for prison guards. There was a lot of attention on cell phones as this like scapegoat, as like prisoners having contraband cell phones is, mm-hmm. you know, somehow the cause of this. It's kind of bizarre. And so, and the media, they just kind of took it. They didn't even question it in most reporting. And so that was just kind of this flashpoint, you know, particularly for people on the inside, like the Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, you know, that's an organization of jailhouse lawyers, you know, and they and many others recognized, like, okay, like, things are dire right now. Like, people are dying, and there's this narrative that's being pushed that, you know, to solve this problem, we just need to put more money into this broken, well, not even broken, but this intentionally racist system. Mm-hmm. So that was really what brought about the prison strike, was that moment in recognizing that we really can't wait any longer to do something on a national level to bring attention, mm-hmm. to what is going on inside.
Right, right. So on that note of bringing attention to it, there's a whole milieu of social media and organizations, of course, doing things on the ground, on the outside, right? And then, of course, on inside. So can you talk about what that general milieu looks like, for August, but, I mean, for other things, too? Because, like you said, Jailhouse Lawyers was also involved in a very large national campaign movement in the last year or so, in D.C. and things of that nature.
Yeah, so I some of the details might escape me. I think that was in, maybe you can help me out here. I know that the national march happened in D.C., early this year, mm-hmm. I believe.
Right.
And that was kind of a mostly outside kind of movement. And then in March, I believe, February and March. Oh, that's mm-hmm. right. It kicked off on Martin Luther King Jr. Day in Florida. There was a statewide work stoppage, mm-hmm. That happened. And that also galvanized a good amount of people on the outside in Florida with kind of solidarity actions and protests at the, you know, the Department of Corrections offices and that sort of thing. So yeah, there's several different kind of organizations and movements that have involved. So Jailhouse Lawyers Speak is one. They're the ones who called for the national prison strike. There's the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, which is both members on the inside and on the outside. So we've been in kind of close communication and alliance with Jailhouse Lawyers Speak prior to the prison strike, and so, you know, quickly endorsed the call to action and joined in that. And Millions for is it Millions for Prisoners? I'm trying to look up the name.
Million Prisoner March.
They were also involved in supporting the prison strike. So yeah, those are some of the formations. And then some of the more common names that you see also came out in support of the strike, the ACLU, the National Lawyers Guild, notable celebrities like Ava DuVernay, you know, the director of 13th, the documentary about the 13th Amendment and the kind of the sort of reformation of slavery under different laws up until like the current prison industrial complex. Lots of people came out in support, and both in support like just politically, but also materially showing up to rallies and organizing events.
Right. For folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland, and we're here with Clayton Dewey from the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee talking about a recent national prisoner strike that happened in August, and of course, you know, has continuation going on with aspects of what people are doing inside and outside as well. So, Clayton, we just talked a little bit about some of the groups that are involved. So two things here. What is the organizing actually look like that people are doing inside and outside? So what does that look like? We talked about some organizations and some marches and stuff. What does work like on the ground, on the outside, to help to basically amplify the voices and actions of incarcerated persons? And what were the goings on inside during August as well? I know that's a lot, so it was kind of two parts there.
Yeah, sure. So as listeners may imagine, it's quite difficult to get word in and out of prison. It's really interesting to be seeing this whole like free speech debate happening.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And like free speech under the guise of like defending just fascist and the alt-right, when there's sort of this like specter of possibly losing one's free speech, and when the reality is that like that's already happened to people who are incarcerated. There's, you know, Kevin Rashid Johnson, for example, is an IWOC member. He's been placed in solitary confinement repeatedly for writing articles exposing what's going on inside prison. He's been transferred repeatedly from one facility to the next, oftentimes with no notification to his family and friends, and being attacked by prison guards without any kind of justice there. The organizing is a lot of writing letters back and forth. Phone calls are better because then at least you can have a little bit more direct communication. But like, you know, for example, I was on the phone with one friend, and we both like were very intentional never to say the word prison strike on the phone, and just kind of say, hey, that thing that's coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
because, you know, all of this communication is being censored and monitored, and you know, IWOC has been placed on numerous lists, you know, and it's kind of one of these cat and mouse games. It's like so much of what the prison officials are doing is blatantly illegal and violates their own codes as far as like what's allowed and what's not allowed in and out of prison. And so we're like constantly faced with this task of like, do we try and appeal these things, or do we try and just, you know, tone down our language or whatever, and just try to continue to speak with one another? It's really quite frustrating, but you know, still persists. Word gets out, word of mouth happens, and so yeah. I mean, as best as we could, it was kind of similar as you would organize on the outside, organizing a campaign, listening to people's concerns, sharing the 10 demands that the jailhouse lawyers speak put together, with a lot of consultation from fellow jailhouse lawyers and incarcerated people. And then, I mean, so part, knowing that we had to kind of somehow overcome this, you know, this intense kind of censorship apparatus. One of the tactics early on was to try and get as much mainstream media as possible, and going after outlets like USA Today and Newsweek, mm-hmm. The New York Times, who aren't always friendly and right. Don't always like fully get it, but they have the reach, you know, like USA Today is going to get into prison and people are going to read those, as opposed to, you know, unfortunately, place outlets like Democracy Now! Or The Nation don't get as much circulation. They still do.
Right, right.
Definitely did interviews with them, but we knew that we had to kind of punch through into the mainstream media so that people on the inside knew that we knew that they were standing up. And when that happens, you know, people are emboldened, their spirits are up, knowing that people are paying attention, have their back. So yeah, I mean, we're pretty successful in that. You know, we got some good coverage from places like USA Today and mm-hmm. The Washington Post. And I just talked to a fellow IWOC member in the Twin Cities recently. He was saying that, yeah, like everyone he's in correspondence with in Minnesota, like heard about the strike and just how fantastic that was. So yeah, it's good. Definitely some real success.
Yeah, some outside attention and some media coverage. Can you talk about what was going on inside? Obviously, in this case, we're talking about a national event, so there's these kind of polycentric sites, if you will, right, all over the place. Can you at least maybe talk about some kind of major examples of what was going on inside during the strike in August, and if there's other things that are continuing right now that people should be aware of that might not have heard about?
Yeah, so, you know, the strike actually kicked off early in Nova Scotia, Canada, which was really encouraging and exciting on a couple of fronts. One, that people were so eager to participate that they started a day early. And two, that, you know, that it was already a multinational movement. We also got word that all of New Mexico was on lockdown. Mm-hmm. Every prison in New Mexico is on lockdown. And at the time, we didn't know if it was connected to the strike or if it was just a coincidence. And so we held off reporting on it because we couldn't get any confirmation on why that was.
Right, because you couldn't hear from anybody.
Yeah, but then a week later, we did hear from a family, you know, someone who has a family inside, and yeah, sure enough, like, it was because of, you know, conditions there in some of the facilities, and they went on a work stoppage actually before the strike, you know, was supposed to formally start on August 21st, just because, you know, conditions at that point, they were ready. It's, you know, sometimes that's how things go, right? Like, we pick a, like, symbolic date, but if, you know, if people are feeling it, then go with
right.
it.
Right, yeah.
So, so that, you know, that happened. Then I think one of the first actions that, and one of the largest actions that happened was that somewhere around 200 immigrants that are detained in Tacoma in a ICE detention facility.
That's Tacoma, Washington. Tacoma,
yeah.
Washington, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, that's right. And that was really good because, you know, there's been a lot of attention on ICE lately as well. And so, you know, there's clear connections, of course, between ICE and the prison system. And I mean, I can just kind of rattle off some of the other states real quick.
Yeah, let's hear a couple more for sure.
Yeah, yeah. California, Texas, Missouri, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Virginia, Maryland, New York, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida all had activity reported. There's probably more that, you know, just hasn't made its way through that censorship apparatus that
right.
I was mentioning before.
Right, right, right.
And a lot of the, like, you know, who we've come to expect, they really kind of throw down in these moments. Florida was particularly active, mm-hmm. As well as several facilities in Texas. Both of them
right.
saw work stoppages. South Carolina, I mean, South Carolina was kind of like similar to New Mexico. Lee Correctional has been on lockdown ever since that tragedy took place. And so that's just kind of continued in some of the other facilities. So that was one thing that we saw. There was a lot of preemptive lockdown mm-hmm. by officials. Like, I think, like, they're, you know, they're willing to halt some of their own operations just because, like, people getting together and organizing collectively is just so threatening to them.
Right, because, strength in numbers.
Yeah. So we also saw a lot of that, of just, like, preemptive lockdown and, like, group punishment to even considering any sort of kind of work stoppage or hunger strike.
Right. So the retaliation is pretty intense. Can you talk a little bit more before we close up on what else? So obviously lockdown is a really big thing. What other kind of things do we see for retaliation of, you know, whether it's actions and or correspondences that are going on during the milieu of these particular nationally coordinated strikes?
Yeah. We'll be releasing another strike update here soon, and I can share some of those details, you know, here now. The National Lawyers Guild in particular has received a lot of information on crackdowns. So some of that is widespread staff perpetrated physical abuse, so prison guards kind of beating up and attacking strikers and resistors. Destruction of prisoners' personal property, obstructing their access to things like grievance forms, trumped up charges, a lot of just like false charges to then send people to solitary confinement,
mm-hmm.
Especially jailhouse lawyers, because, you know, they know that they have some of the most skills in combating these abuses. Like we had just talked about, the sort of preemptive lockdown and segregation of thousands of prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when lockdown happens, like, this is a very difficult circumstance to be in. It means, like, a significant scaling back on meals. It means, like, getting meals late at night, or, you know, food that's cold. It's, you know, like, not showering for several days on end, you know, no kind of outside time. I mean, essentially, it's kind of like people are just on, like, solitary confinement on a large scale. Right.
Yeah, so learning about these things can access a lot of information, documents, and inquiries with the National Lawyers Guild, ACLU. The particular organization that we're talking about with tonight is Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, which is simply incarceratedworkers.org. That's incarceratedworkers.org. Clayton, do you want to wrap up with any other links or quick things people should check out before we close up?
The Jailhouse Lawyers Speak are best to follow on Twitter. So that's, if you go to Twitter and search Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, you'll find it. But their handle is Jail Law Speak. And you just plugged IWalk. So, yeah, again, that website is incarceratedworkers.org. You know, we're part of the larger IWW union. So if you have friends and family on the inside, look us up. We can, keep building this movement. Or if you're just in solidarity and, organizing is one of the most effective ways to fighting this and bringing about the world.
Strength and organizing. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Listen to this previous Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thanks again so much to our guests, Incarcerated Worker Organizing Committee. Big thanks to our engineers, Michael Fictalis, and thank you for tuning in. Free them all.